This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
This is Mick. You're listening to Trivial Thursdays on WRFL. Thanks for tuning in. Today is April 21st, and if it's your birthday, happy birthday to you. We've got a great show coming up, and let's see, a little later on in the show, we're going to visit with the hosts of one of my favorite community affairs shows, which is Key Conversations. Patrice Muhammad is going to be here along with Delano Massey. And that's in the second hour of the show. Right around the corner, once we take a little musical break, we'll be visiting with Victoria Benson of the Lexington Art League, who's brought Andrew Brinkhorst along, a local photographer who's about to unveil a show of music photography. So all these topics are near and dear to my heart. Won't you stick around? Thanks for tuning in. I'm here with my friend Victoria Benson. Hi, Victoria.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you.
You too.
Let's see. So what is... I heard you saying a little while ago that you make a little bit of a commute. Are you a bedroom community resident now? Do you live in Midway?
Yes.
You know what they call it? They call that, right?
No. Now I'm going to have to
Midway's
share that.
A bedroom community.
A bedroom community.
Which sounds sort of sordid, but really it just means that, like, you don't live in the hustle and bustle of the main place, and you live in like one of the outlying communities.
Nice.
Or something. So how's stuff in Midway?
It's slow, quiet, bedroomy.
You know, there's some famous people there, right?
There are?
Yeah.
Me?
You.
Me.
Well, what's his name used to live there? I think he still does. What's his name? Jessica Lange was married to him. And she maybe lived there too.
I'm learning so
much. And he's
a
playwright, and he's an actor.
Oh, yes. I know who you're talking about.
And I'd be in, you know.
My husband has
I'm a fool for
play.
Not being able to remember his. He didn't like to talk about his plays, by the way. It was just funny because I tried talking to him about his plays, and he does not want to talk about it. Because he graduated to become a much more significant actor. He was in The Right Stuff. His name's not Tom, I don't think. But he was an acclaimed playwright. Somebody in this room is going to come up with his name within
Sam Shepard.
Thank
yes.
you, Sam Shepard. So
texted in by a listener.
Thank you, much appreciated. Yeah, so yeah, I made the mistake once of seeing him downtown, and I thought I'd be the erudite guy who, you know, mentioned his illustrious underground play career as a playwright. He totally did not want to talk about that.
Oh,
both Mallory and Alex texted.
All right. So anyway, that's Midway. So let's see, Victoria, you've been doing stuff for the Lexington Art League for a while now.
Yeah, it's gonna be 2 years in June or July.
Yeah.
So
I noticed you have a Woodland Art Fair T-shirt on. That's one of the things you helm and kind of manage.
It's my favorite thing to do.
That's more coming up than it is having passed
mm-hmm.
now, although it probably seems to you like it just happened.
It does, but I've been planning since September. It's like 2 weeks after Woodland's over, you go straight back into planning.
Right,
so
right.
I'm excited
about it.
Well,
I mean, it's a cast of thousands.
Yeah, it really is.
It literally is.
It really is. So, yeah, we're working on that, getting the artists, their applications are in, jurors are going through and juring them, and we'll start inviting and just keep moving forward.
Yeah, so planning is pretty much key for that, I'm guessing.
Yes, it is. Every week.
When is Woodland Arts Fair? Just to remind
It's August 20th and 21st
okay,
this year.
Yeah.
So.
The other beautiful season in Kentucky, in other words, in the fall and the spring. Summer's fine too, but I'm always going back and forth with people about, or maybe myself, about whether I like spring or fall better in the bluegrass, because they're both wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Spring has the benefit of no mosquitoes up to the point, that point being two nights ago on my back porch when I got bit on the ankle by a mosquito.
Yeah, I was going to say
bastards.
It. Yeah.
So, let's see. What's going on over at the castle, as my daughter likes to call
it? The castle. She's so sweet, Libby. We are currently, today, finishing up installing This Is the Thing.
Yeah.
A photography show by the wonderful Andrew Brinkhorst.
Who's going to be hanging out with us. We're just acting like he's not here yet, just for fun.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's a show that where he has documented musicians through the past 2 years, 2.5 years, around Lexington. So we're really excited to showcase that.
Yeah.
And link those two communities together at the Loudon House.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have some great catering, and also the Northside Sheiks there too.
Mm-hmm.
And that all happens tomorrow.
And that is, you guys are doing, it's called Fourth Friday, right? Mm-hmm. Is that what you call it? There's all these like, you know, first Monday, second Tuesday,
yeah.
whatever. But yeah, so Fourth Friday is like a longstanding Lexington Art League tradition. Mm-hmm. Kind of went away for a little while. Now
yeah,
you guys have come back to it.
Yeah, it went away for like a year and a half before my time. And it's just come back as of last year. And we're seeing really good success. People wanted it back, so we brought it back. And mm-hmm. it's fun.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's like, it's kind of, I don't know, just like a sort of social mixer plus art sort of thing. You get to, like, lurk around the halls of the castle. I said. But the Loudon House is a fascinating kind of building.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It is castle-esque.
It is. There's a tower.
Uh-huh. And I think, I don't know if it's, you know, the fact that it's called Castlewood Park is just a coincidence or a good question, right? Let's get Andrew in here, and first we'll play a song, though. I'm going to hit on a little bit of trivia. My social media producer, Nicole, is here. Hey, Nicole, can you come over here for a sec? Let's see. I just wanted to say, A, that how much I've appreciated you doing this, and B, how I just really hope that you're just going to keep doing it forever, but I think you're probably going to stop when your internship's over.
Yes, and I graduate.
Oh, man. Which fortunately isn't this week, because like when you weren't here, like off the bat this morning, I was like, oh no, Nicole. So I've gotten really used to this. Nicole hands me these sheets of trivia that are kind of marked up, which is nice. We learn things like that Simon and Garfunkel released The Boxer on this day in 1969. The Beatles and the Rolling Stones
met
for a street fight. No. No, they met at the Crawdaddy Club in Richmond, England. But it says the Rolling Stones opened the show. So does that mean the Beatles and the Rolling Stones played together? Do we know this?
I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
I thought it was interesting that Elton John opened for T-Rex.
Right. That was his solo concert debut opening for T-Rex, who was huge until Mark Bolan had to go and die. I'm sorry. It's time plus tragedy equals comedy, they say.
Agreed.
The show is always a curated version of that somehow. Oh, the Leuven brothers. It's Ira Leuven's birthday. We may have to play something by them. The early, super, super early country artists. Way back in the day. He was born in 1924. What else did you see here, Nicole, that you loved?
Not quite sure. I'm still waking up.
It's Iggy Pop's birthday. You guys help me keep track of this stuff because we got to play some Iggy Pop. Yes. He was born in 1947. James Osterman, it doesn't note here. That's his name. Though his friends and I call him Jim.
Karen Foster's birthday.
Who?
Karen Foster.
Karen Foster, I should know. Can you tell me who?
He's a model.
Oh.
Or actress.
Let's see. So, again, great thanks to... How much longer do we got you doing this kind of stuff on the show? Do you know? Don't say just one more week.
Well, I can do it until you want me to stop. I don't have to do it when my internship credits are over.
Okay, great. She can do it forever, folks.
I am leaving.
Are you... what are you doing? Are you moving?
I am moving. And I'm doing everything that I said that I wouldn't do. Moving back to Louisville, back to my parents.
Louisville's great. Like, I talked to some people that moved to Louisville from somewhere. I mean, you know, you grew up there, so maybe you have mixed feelings about that.
I'm giving myself 1 year tops,
yeah,
and then I'm out of Kentucky.
All right, then. All right.
Fingers crossed.
You're always welcome back here on Trivial Thursdays. And we wish you all the best, but I want to thank you, and I'll thank you more for, you know, for all that you've done on the show. I really appreciate it. So Nicole does social media, and it really will be a good idea today in particular to follow along on social media, because we're going to come back and talk to Andrew Brinkhorst, who we do this occasionally with photographers, where we have conquered the visual aspect of the medium of radio, which is a big deal. And we do so by posting things on the Trivial Thursdays Facebook page.
Please interact with me.
Yeah. If you have questions for the guests or for us, you're welcome to post them on the Trivial Thursdays Facebook page or on Twitter, which works. Somehow it works.
It does.
It's Trivial Thursday is the Twitter handle. So you can ask questions there too. We're going to come back and talk to Victoria Benson of the Lexington Art League some more and be joined by Andrew Brinkhorst and talk about some of Andrew's photos of Lexington music performers. I want to take this opportunity to play some old country Elton John from Tumbleweed Connection. I'm going to play Country Comfort. So the deal was, well, we're saying that Elton John opened up for T-Rex, which does seem like a weird bill.
Very weird.
But, you know, Elton John is like, man, he's been through so many, in his own words, he's still standing. But yeah, back in the day, I mean, like, so go listen to some of those really old Elton John records. Like, this is from 1970, The Tumbleweed Connection. And it's just kind of country almost, which is fascinating.
He had phases.
Great, great phases and great, great costumes. So
the best of.
This is Country Comfort. We'll be back. This is Trivial Thursdays. The Wags from their brilliantly titled album, I'm So Over the Wags, with Come Up for Air. I'm here with Victoria Benson of the Lexington Art League and joined by photographer Andrew Brinkhorst. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Mick. Thanks for having me.
Sure. That was a track that you picked off that record. That was this record is an interesting kind of miasma, I think is the exact word.
That's a great word for it.
of a clatch of Lexington, if I can use clatch and miasma in the same paragraph. of Lexington musicians, many of whom you document, because a lot of these people, this group in particular, kind of run in a circle.
Yeah, there are a lot of little musical circles in Lexington, and this happens to be the one that I found my way into.
Right.
And I knew most of these folks from other bands and other events before they put the record out and played.
So on this Wags record, which features a number of people doing vocals and in some cases making kind of cameo appearances, that's Chris Dennison, who was singing that song, who is just...
Chris is awesome.
A mesmerizing soul singer. I guess you could say blue-eyed soul singer. I don't know. So he sings lead on that track. It looks like... Yeah, he sings lead on a couple tracks, but Chris, who was in Chico Fellini, and I believe maybe has a solo album coming out soon.
I think he might be working on a solo
album. Yeah, I think so, too. So. Victoria, Lexington Art League, how did you connect with Andrew?
Well, Andrew might want to share that story. I wasn't super involved in that.
Well, Andrew, before we even get to that, let's say, first of all, you're a documentary photographer. Can we say that?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Documentary and street photography is really my interest.
What's the street? Talk a little bit about street photography and what it's kind of come to mean, I guess.
I'm not sure what it's come to mean. I think it's coming, it's coming back.
Yeah.
And I think people are paying more attention to it. I think part of that is that everybody has a camera now.
Yep.
They carry their camera around in their phone and they're taking pictures of stuff.
But I'm taking a picture of you right now.
Yeah, exactly. there's something about being able to create art out of an everyday event and an everyday scene,
mm-hmm.
that you know, otherwise might just pass you right by.
Right. And these days it is everyone does have a camera in their pockets, which, I mean, just for the record, photography, I always tell people, has always been a populist art form. You know,
right.
you mm-hmm. it's just that the mechanism used to be a lot bigger. And those guys were the total ballers back in the day when you would have a super huge camera and get, you just don't understand what it was like to get that compelling photo that you've seen from like the 1940s.
Right. And even before that,
right.
I just went to, we did a spring break trip with my son, Alex, and he wanted to go to Washington, D.C. So we of course did Smithsonian, and they had this amazing exhibit of early photography. There were battle scenes from the Civil War that were essentially done by the street photographers of the time that
mm-hmm.
just rode around in their camera on their wagon, basically. They would have their own wagon with a whole couple of horses, and they'd pull it around and get it out, set it up in the middle of the battle, and take photographs.
Right, and then post them to Frontier Facebook.
Exactly.
Now, the truck, though, being their darkroom.
Yeah, exactly.
With all the chemicals and everything in it, and just, yeah, incredible. Just, it is, I wish that I could impart to people the heroics involved in early photography, you know, in the production of photos.
Right. And even today, conflict photographers today are just, you know, it's becoming more and more dangerous because the stigma of, it used to be that photographers and journalists were relatively safe
mm-hmm.
in the front lines. They were kind of, you know, both sides kind of
agreed
took care to not, yeah. you know, to not target them. But now they're open targets. And,
yeah.
and that's a sad thing.
Now, how did you, Andrew, how did you come to photography? What's your earliest
Gosh,
kind
I,
of memory
I did, of it? I did photography when I was in junior high and high school, way back, you know, shot 35 millimeter film and played around with that. Stayed with it through college. I shot for my high school paper, played a little bit with it in college, and then got out of it. When our son was born, I decided I'd better get back into photography and learn this digital thing
mm-hmm.
and figure out how that all works. And I just sort of jumped in and discovered the world of photojournalists and documentary photography that I had sort of danced around the fringes of earlier.
Yeah.
Met a couple of photojournalists, went to a big festival, met some really amazing, famous photographers who were very generous and gracious with their time, and was hooked.
Mm-hmm. And then that led you. So, were you living in Lexington then, or have you been moving?
I was. I've been in Lexington for the last 18 years.
Okay.
Lived here a little bit before that. Moved away. Moved back.
Okay.
So, but 18 years now in a row. So.
Yeah. Now on the topic of music photography, I was trying to remember this morning who it was that said. Talking about music is like dancing about architecture.
Right.
It's one of my favorite quotes. I can't remember who said it off the top of my head, but maybe one of your kids knows.
I'll probably get a text in a minute. Oh, there it goes.
but like, so as someone who's occasionally dabbled in music photography myself, what are some of the things that you think are quintessential? What are some of the things for you that are quintessential about trying to capture an act that is principally an act of sound in a visual medium?
Yeah, it's really a challenge. As a matter of fact, someone who has advised me that I've studied with, that's a pretty good world famous photographer, advised me to not try and take on shooting music photography because it's just hard. Because you get caught up in the music, you get caught up in the emotion of the crowd and everything going on, and while you feel the emotion, it doesn't necessarily translate to the frame.
Right.
And it's the ability to get that emotion or to convey that feeling in the frame without the audio context around it.
Victoria, yeah, can you comment on that and how it's
a jump?
Yeah,
in.
I'm like,
she's
ready.
Bouncing up and down on her chair over here.
I would just like to say that Andrew does that really well. I saw some of the pieces yesterday while we were getting them installed, and just the way he photographs the movement of musicians and the light, you really feel like you're there and that you're experiencing what he was experiencing and what everybody else was experiencing in that moment. It's just really interesting and really, really good.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
If you guys are hanging, it becomes art then, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a certificate that says right. That.
This is art.
You know, I don't know. Again, speaking from my own experience too, it's interesting. Like, if you photograph musicians, like you were saying, Andrew, there's a seduction there, and the seduction is kind of the way music makes you feel. And if you're a photographer, there's a natural desire, I think, to want to try to capture that.
Right.
In the visual medium and translate the sound thing into the visual thing.
Right.
There's all kinds of red herrings here, but my favorite one is that if you're photographing Prince, then it's obviously Prince. If you're photographing some famous musician, you can easily get seduced into thinking that you've got a great photo just because it's someone. If everyone knows who it is, you're like, hey, that's Mariah Carey.
Right.
And it doesn't by no means is it necessarily a compelling photo.
Exactly.
It's just a photo of a famous person.
Exactly.
And so I think that this seduction always exists when it comes to photographing music. You take the challenge on. I think the only way to take the challenge on in some ways is to photograph people who are not instantly recognizable.
I think that's part of it. I think that helps. Part of it is, admittedly, I've come away from one of the questions I get every time I'm out is, did you get any good photos tonight? Right. And the answer is, I don't know.
Right.
I'm probably not going to look at them when I go home. I don't look at them on my phone or on my camera typically. I'll let
chimping.
Them sit. I won't chimp.
Do you know the term?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Where did you learn it from? I learned it
back in all the professional photographers in it will talk about chimping. And chimping, for those of you who aren't in the photography world, is the ability or the action of taking the photo and then immediately looking down at the back of the camera to see what you got.
Right.
Right? So you see the head going up and down, and you kind of look like a chimpanzee. That's where the phrase comes from, that you're looking down and then you're looking up to take a picture. What happens when you do that, typically, is you'll get almost the photo, and you'll look at it, and the photo that you really wanted to get is the one that happened while you were looking and you weren't shooting.
Yep. Right. While you were chimping.
Exactly. Exactly.
There should be a term also for like extended chimping or something, which is to say that I'm the bad guy who won't show pictures to people. Like, you take pictures of people's photo in any situation. It happens with kids a lot, I confess. And some kids will be like, can I see the photo? And I'm like, no.
Yeah. Exactly.
Totally. I'm just like,
sorry,
no.
Back, it doesn't
maybe
work.
Maybe later.
Yeah, display doesn't work.
I'd say maybe later. Because you have to be present as a photographer.
Right. And you have to see what's going on. You have to know what's going on. And to the original kind of question about photographing live music, I took over 17,000 photographs in the 2.5 years I've been working on this project. And that's 17,000 photographs just of musicians in this project. I mean, just for this project. That's nothing else. And a lot of them, you look at it and you say, oh, there's a guy playing a guitar.
Right.
Right. And you
he's
just,
a musician.
He's
there's a
musician,
picture of
there's
the musician.
A guitar. And interestingly, sometimes you get one and it's like, wow, look at that's great. Look at the light's good. The mood's good. It's all there. What song was this? Oh, wait, this was when they were in transition and I think he was tuning. Right. There's no way to tell in the photograph what's happening musically. So you have to be able to show that emotion and show that context and try and tell that deeper story.
Right.
The image.
A story that they're maybe is related to the story that they're telling in song.
In song. Exactly. Exactly.
And I can't count the number of times as recently as last week when I went to Soulful Space and saw Maggie Lander. I feel like it's hard to explain, but worth noting to people, the effect that music has on you, like as a photographer, and you see it all the time when people with their camera, with their smartphones, hold them up, because you hear moments in music where you're like, I've got to get a picture of this.
Right. Right. I'm starting to be conscious of that as well. Seeing people, you know, holding their cameras up during the show the whole time. It's like, there's one thing about taking the selfie to show you were there and to share with your friends and put it on social media, but, you know, be present for the event, be present mm-hmm. for the show. And odds are, if you're taking pictures, you may not really be present in the event. That's a really hard thing to do, to photograph and be present and enjoy the event.
That's an interesting observation, I think, by a photographer, because...
Yeah, I've done sports photography as well. Typically, like at a show, if I'm shooting the show, people say, "Oh, what songs did they play?" I may not even remember.
Right.
I honestly don't. I'm thinking of things like, "Oh, I wish they'd turn off the red lights." I'm thinking things like, "Can I get to that other side of the stage without making a complete idiot of myself and tripping over something on stage?"
You know, mm-hmm.
Things like that. And I'm not in the moment, and it's doing that because I'm working, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not there to enjoy the show. I'm there to work and capture the events.
Andrew Brinkhorst is here. He is a Lexington photographer who is unveiling a show with the help of Victoria Benson and the Lexington Art League. That's happening at the Loudoun House. It premieres tomorrow?
Yeah, tomorrow at 6 p.m.
6 o'clock.
At the Loudoun House.
The show is called This Is the Thing, is that right?
It is.
Why is it called This Is the Thing?
This Is the Thing is a lyric from a Corley and the Townies song. The song is actually Tempest Wind. And I was editing very early in the project a bunch of photographs. And I happened to be playing the new Corley song, the new Corley and the Townies CD. And that song came on. And that song had always been a favorite of mine. And I'd had the opportunity to talk to Corey about it. And she asked me if I wanted to know what it was really about. And I said, well, of course. But first she made me tell her what I thought it was about. And I thought it was about just working and doing your thing and persevering and following your passion, even if that doesn't seem to be the logical choice. And the details behind the true story are really hers to share. So, you know, that's hers to share. But I was very close. It was a big decision for her. She did share that it was a song that one of the first times she'd sat down and written an entire song, words and lyrics and music, all in one sitting. And that kind of became the whole theme for the whole project, is the musicians and the people in that crowd, the artists, the craftspeople that are pursuing their art in the face of a lot of challenges.
I was going to play a Corley and the Townies song. I don't know if I can.
That one's really long.
Okay. Well, I've got...
kind of mellow for the morning.
I'll tell you what, why don't we... let's see. I'm going to play Funny That Way, I think.
That's a good choice.
And so this is one of the bands that our guest, Andrew Brinkhorst, has spent some time photographing. And also a band that kind of contains a number of musicians who we're in the midst of. This. And it's not new exactly, but we've got a number of really hardworking musicians who Robbie Cosenza is probably... the hardest working man in show business, which is to say that
he's
like in so many of these bands, and a lot of these people kind of share their talents across different bands.
Right.
Corley and the Townies is as true as any of them, probably.
Right. Right.
With like Fred Sexton, I think, is in that band.
Fred Scott Wilmoth. You know, David White. It's kind of interesting. You know, those folks are the Townies. So. They've been around, and Corey connected with them early on, and it became a thing.
And became part of This Is The Thing, which is the
became a part of This Is The Thing.
So check it out. This is Coralie and the Townies. This is Funny That Way. And we will be back with Victoria Benson of the Lexington Art League and photographer Andrew Brinkhorst. Stick around. There's more to come.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.
Coralie and the Townies there with Funny That Way. And, man, I love that woman's voice. It's remarkable. Well, we're here with Andrew Brinkhorst, the photographer, and Victoria Benson of the Lexington Art League. It's got to be hard to concentrate when you're... I mean, I know when I go to live shows, if you see somebody that's good, then you're supposed to be completely mesmerized, basically. So photographing this kind of thing, again, there's a lot of red herrings. I just like to mention, as a photographer, it's you want to take pictures, and I think it's really important to reiterate what you were saying. Like, it's not a bad idea, really, for just, I don't know, people who go to concerts to just, for the most part, kind of suppress that urge to take pictures. Not for anybody else's sake, really for your own sake.
Right, right. Live the moment. Be there and enjoy it. You'll remember it. Take a couple of photos to remember it by. But the photographs that you click in your head, you will outlive the ones you have on your phone.
Mm-hmm. But you, on the other hand, are there kind of shooting.
I'm there all the time.
Yeah.
Not all the time, but I'm there a lot. That's part of it, I think, is... I get to see a lot of, I saw a lot of shows. I spent a lot of evenings and late nights at clubs, at little venues in town, at Tally Ho for breakfast sometimes.
The kind of breakfast that happens when you stay up all night.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, we posted, Andrew is here, and Andrew's show called This Is The Thing is opening on tomorrow at the Lexington Art League. And we did post, Nicole posted several photos from the exhibit, and I thought maybe we'd talk about them just a little bit. I'm curious if there's a black and white photo of a woman walking across a bridge out in the country. Is that Coralie by any chance?
That is Coralie. That's, we were going to the very first Moonshiners Ball.
Okay.
And that was a fairly significant event. Obviously, because it was the first Moonshiners Ball, but
people can see this, by the way, on the Facebook page, on the Trivial Thursdays Facebook page. You can see the photos that we're talking about.
So, but this was kind of a big deal for me because it was early on in the project. I'd been doing it maybe 5 months, I think, from the original concept, and I had just started meeting a lot of the musicians. And Coralie and the Townies invited me to come with them. They were performing at Moonshiners, and they invited me to come with them as part of the band and to shoot the show. So that was one of the first times I got to actually go out to a larger event with the band and sort of hang out with that.
Mm-hmm.
And in this photograph, Corey is walking across the bridge, and we're coming out of the food area, the family RV kind of area, headed towards the main. Pavilion.
You can see the stage off in the distance.
Exactly.
There's kind of like some
and there's not a whole lot else out there. Moonshiners Ball is held outside of Berea in a little holler. There's no cell phone coverage on the whole property, and it's a wonderful event.
Mm-hmm. So let's see. And so this is maybe a musician kind of, I don't know, transitioning from one world into
literally a come on, I think it's over this way kind of thing, exploring. We had no idea where we were going. It's the first time any of us had been there. And it was the first time the event was put on.
Let's see. Another of the photos is a photo, and this is probably the most iconic of your exhibit, is the photo of, it's a photo of a guitar case with a variety of
merchandise,
I believe is they
merch.
Call it.
Yeah, that's Max Benson's guitar case. Max played a show at Buster's back when it was Buster's.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of struck me, one, he had kind of a cool presentation in that he used the guitar case to not only display the his merch, but to carry it around. And he had it all pre-rigged.
Oh, you mean he kept it all in the case?
He kept it in there, yeah. Okay. It was actually a spare guitar case, so he just kept all his merch in the guitar case and carried it with all of his other gear. But he had it pre-wired with little white twinkle lights and stuff like that. So he basically found a table near an electrical outlet and walked over and opened it up, hung the T-shirts on it, and plugged it in, and he was ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
But all musicians typically will have merchandise, and especially the smaller ones, it's a big deal when people buy T-shirts for them, or buy CDs, mm-hmm. or buy the cup holder, the koozie for your beer. Buy the download card, because a lot of times that's where they'll make a little bit more money to pay for their show, to mm-hmm. pay for being out.
Yeah. Let's see here. Let's take a look at. We've got. A tattooed arm here with an acoustic guitar. Who is this?
Oh, you don't know. You don't recognize that one. That's Tree Jacks. That's Melissa.
Right.
Jackson.
Okay.
That's Tree. Part of Small Batch, and that was a show at Al's, I believe. And I had noticed Tree's tattoo. I know the stories of some of the tattoos on some of the musicians that I've met.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the story behind that one, but it's always kind of epitomized to me her dedication,
yeah.
and her determination to show the world, right? It's right there. When she plays, you see she's from Kentucky. I mean, it's right there. So
because she has, in case I don't know if the actual words were spoken, Kentucky gloriously emblazoned
on her right arm. Yeah. So every time she plays guitar, you see it on the back of her. I guess that's the back of her forearm.
The side that people can see.
The side that people you can see when they're playing a guitar.
Yeah.
But I had noticed that very early on when I met Tree and had decided to try and capture it, and it took quite a while to finally get the right spot, the right show, the right light,
right
mood to capture her doing that.
Well, it kind of brings us to this topic of, my question of, what in your photographic journey, are there qualities that you think are quintessentially Kentucky in some way about? Did you learn anything kind of about these musicians that presents itself in your photographs that you think is tied to firmly to place, to the bluegrass, to Kentucky?
I think there's a lot of pride of place, but I'm not sure if that's unique to here. There's a lot of dedication. There's a lot of hard work.
Mm-hmm.
But determination, I think, is probably something that Kentuckians are pretty good at sometimes.
Determination to
Getting it done. Taking care of business, as Elvis's old crew was called, the TCB crew, right?
Yeah.
To just pursue their art. And persevere no matter what it takes to mm-hmm. have three jobs to be able to go out and play,
Are you going to keep doing this kind of photography?
This is actually a subset of my original project idea. I was out at an event and just had been looking for a project to pursue that was somewhat documentarian, and all of my photographer friends said, find something that you're passionate about, find something that's local, and it'll be easy. And I couldn't find anything. And one evening I just got struck by this combination of live music, local musicians, small businesses, and local artists all kind of pulling together in this almost renaissance we have going on here in downtown. And in all of Lexington, around the arts and around music and around entrepreneurial small businesses. I thought, well, this is it. I need to document this.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to work sound for bands in college. I'm a bad drummer from way back when in junior high and high school. So the music was the clear choice of what to do first. So the next parts of the projects as it continue will be the fine art side of the Renaissance, and then also the business, small business, entrepreneurial spirit in the community right now. And those projects will have probably have a little bit different look. They'll be a little bit more documentarian, a little bit more traditional documentary, Nat Geo-ish. But yeah, it's going to keep going, and the music part will never be done. I don't think we ever finish I don't think a photography book is ever done. Even when they're reissued, they have new photos. So.
People can see these photos at the Lexington Art League, right, Victoria?
Yeah, tomorrow night from 6 to 9, we'll be there. And the North Side Shakes will be performing.
North Side Shakes.
And we'll have food by Creative Table. So it'll be a fun time.
How big are these prints, Andrew?
The prints range from 6.5 by 9 3/4 to 24 by 36,
mm-hmm.
and some of them are printed on aluminum, some of them are pigment inkjet, some of them are commercial C prints. So there's a variety.
Fantastic, Victoria. I don't want you to get out of here without talking about some of the great things that the Art League's doing that are coming up. You guys are always doing stuff.
Yeah.
Of course, there's Fourth Friday, which is tomorrow.
We have Fourth Friday, and then we have Fourth Friday again next month, and it'll still be focused on Andrew's show. We'll also have Maggie and the Landers, so mm-hmm. that'll be a fun one to come to. We also have an artist potluck and artist panel on April 26th with Andrew. It's just a place for artists to come and talk about their process and ask each other questions, followed by Andrew talking about his process and his story with the show. And then we'll have Family Day on April 30th for the kiddos to get involved, so that'll be fun.
So Family Day is, what's up with that?
It's from 11 to 1 at the Loudoun House on that Saturday, April 30th, and anyone's welcome. It's just a time to bring the art down to the little people's level so they can understand it and have fun, and they can make art of their own. I believe they're going to make versions of ukuleles and play them, and we're also doing paint to music in the courtyard. So I'm really looking forward to that. That'll be fun.
And full disclosure, I am participating in that as I'll be the ukulele Mick, because I can't come up with a better name yet.
and we are so happy to have you for that.
So that'll just be like a ukulele dance party for.
I'm going to participate too in that.
For kids of all ages, isn't that what they say?
How can you not? Pass that up?
And in Andrew's honor, I'll be playing a wide variety of rock and roll hits.
There we go. Rock and roll ukulele.
Like, I need to learn some more Ramones songs, actually.
One thing I would like to encourage everybody, if you're out, especially if you're a musician or an artist and you have shows coming up, one thing we're doing that's going to be kind of fun in the exhibit is we're taking one of the back rooms that doesn't have any prints in it, and we're putting up show posters. So we're pasting them up. So if you're a musician and you have a poster for an upcoming show, bring it in. If you have some posters from old shows, bring them in. They'll end up as part of the exhibit, and the exhibit's going to change over time as we do that. So that should be pretty cool.
That is fantastic. Well, thank you all both for coming and visiting. Can't wait to see the photos hanging.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll catch up with you next time. Come visit some more, won't you?
Absolutely.
And let's see. Right now I'm going to play one of my daughter's favorite songs, actually. Lately we've been in the realm. Maybe you'll consider this for a future project. I was playing on the way to her school the other day. I was playing a song by Skrillex. Don't tell anyone that I was doing that. my cool friends won't like me anymore. And my daughter got a sly look on her face, and she was like, "This is robot music." And that has led down this entire, like, this, now we just listen to robot rock all the time. And really, it kind of maybe all sort of goes back to Herbie Hancock. Okay. John Legend there with The Roots, with Compared to What? A song that I admittedly probably play too much, but I can't help it. It's a Les McCann song, who is a Lexingtonian. And by some accounts, kind of has it's considered to be a civil rights song in many ways. Les McCann, who has lived in Los Angeles forever, but has sort of deigned to come back from time to time now, and like has kind of established some sort of the Les McCann Music School or something like that at the Lyric Theater in downtown Lexington. But before I continue any further, or maybe in spite of that, I'm happy, excuse me, to welcome Patrice Muhammad and Delano Massey to my show. Hi, you guys.
Hey, thanks so much for having us. Pleasure and an honor to be here.
Patrice and Delano are two of the hosts of Key Conversations Radio. Yeah.
We are.
You guys leave behind? Who did you not give the wake-up call to?
Lizelle Lowe.
That's right, yeah. So, but you didn't really leave him behind.
No, we did not.
Yeah.
People have real jobs. You know, people are on Key Conversations as a hobby, as a service to the community for their own reasons. Delano can let you know his personal reasons why. But
can
you know,
say
like
those
I
in
said,
front of Patrice?
But you know, he's got to make a living. So, you know, everybody's not free as a bird like me.
Yeah. Or does an early morning radio show where you don't have to, where it cannot interfere with work. I don't know if I recommend it or not, but it works for me.
It's tough on your guests. I'm going to tell you, it was rough being out in traffic like this. I'm not used to that.
Now, you guys, how do you, how long, Key Conversations Radio, which, by the way, and we'll say this a few times, it airs, you guys managed to get this out there in a number of different ways, right?
Yeah, so Key Conversations Radio got started in 2005, just a year after my husband and I founded the newspaper Key, the mm-hmm. Key News Journal. So Key Conversations, we are now on the sevens, as we call it, every Sunday, 7 a.m. We're on 107.9 The Beat. And then at 7 p.m., we're on WUKY's 91.3 FM.
Excellent. So, I guess you guys, so you pre-record the show, right? This is like beyond my technical.
We absolutely pre-record, but let me tell you, things have gotten a lot better. For a while, we were pre-recording, like we were on at 10 a.m. over on Groovin' 1580 a.m., Sundays at 10 a.m.
Okay.
And we would have to tape at 7:30 because they needed the studio for a live sports show. So our guests would have to be there at 7:30 on a Sunday. So that was real commitment when we could get mayors, you know, people running for governor. We could get real people up at 7:30 on a Sunday because nobody else speaks to our audience. Nobody else speaks to the black community or brings up the issues of the black community. We're the only black hosted and produced talk radio show on commercial or public radio in Central Kentucky.
And that is, and whenever I listen to your show, I'm always mesmerized by it. I feel like you guys are talking about things I don't hear anybody else talk about. And having kind of compelling conversations about it. There's three of you all usually on the air, so you sort of, and I think three is kind of a cool number for this, even though my show doesn't usually work that way. But like, yeah. You can, three is can
it's
I go ahead and say
number.
It? Yeah, I was going to say, thank you, you said it. Like, because you can get, I mean, it works, it even works with the Blue Man Group. I don't know if you've ever seen them, but like, yeah. Three is a fascinating number for dialogue because then two people can disagree with one person, right. One person can switch sides. You know, you got this dynamic going around, and the issues that you all tend to talk about are often, you know, hot topics kind of really. So
I think we have a great mix of the three because we have a gender gap. So we have two males and one female. Then we have two media professionals and one lay person. We have someone who's native to Kentucky and two people who are not. So I think it gives interesting perspective. And, you know, Delano can share why he enjoys being on the show because, you know, he comes with a different perspective.
What is that different perspective, Delano?
You know, I try to keep Lizelle and Patrice in line.
Is that right?
Primarily.
Well, that must be a thankless
keep
show.
Us from running with scissors.
Yeah. I try to think about things just from the different perspectives as a journalist. And I know that a lot of times Patrice and I will have conversations about that. Like, we try to look at things objectively and look at it from through the eyes or the lens of a journalist. So that's the main thing. And I enjoy it because it actually gives me an opportunity to kind of talk. And, you know, oftentimes I've been behind the scenes. If I was working at a newspaper, you saw a byline, but you did not know who I was. And it's the same even today. Mm-hmm. I'm working often behind the scenes. So the radio show kind of gives me an opportunity to voice myself.
And you do. So you work, I know, at WKYT mm-hmm. to some extent. And then also, is the Herald Leader too, or is
no,
that? Okay.
I used to be at the Herald Leader.
That's what I thought. Okay.
And I've been at WKYT for the past couple of years now.
Okay. So that makes you a journalist with feet on the ground, basically. I mean, you're out covering issues, and but also from and building stories that in some way, I don't know, are told maybe in a slightly different way than or maybe a very different way sometimes than they get told on key conversations. Would you say that's true? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
I think so. I think that there's often overlap. Like, there'll be things that we discuss, especially if it's something that impacts the black community. And we probably wouldn't take that approach in the traditional news mm-hmm. outlet, like whether it was the newspaper or if it's the TV station. But with Key Conversations, we're looking at things from a totally different perspective. We are looking at that through the lens of the black community and how that topic might have an impact on the community.
Right.
Because often it is very different. You know, the way that the way that one story impacts the black community is always different than a majority. Like, when you talk about the Flint water crisis, everybody was upset about the Flint water crisis. Like, that was a travesty for everybody. But the black community felt particularly impacted by that because that city's majorly black.
Mm-hmm.
And it had black leadership. And that black leadership had been unseated by the governor of the state, that the governor had basically declared eminent domain of several cities with black mayors around the state of Michigan. So that's the story we were talking about, is who actually was in charge of this travesty. And we talked about it from that perspective.
And then also in a longer format, I guess it's the word I'm looking for. But I don't know. I think that we all can agree here that it's probably more edifying in a lot of ways when we get to talk about these things in segments that are longer than, say, a, I don't know, what's a typical length of a TV news segment, Delano?
1 minute, 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And our segments are 13 and 19.
Yeah.
So we have, you know, we got a lot of time.
Yeah. Now, Patrice Muhammad, you're also a Michigander. Is that what they say?
They do say Michiganders, but I'm from the D. Anybody who listens to the show or talks to me longer than 10 minutes knows that I'm from Detroit.
Yeah.
City I am immensely proud of.
Right. And now how, you've been in Kentucky for good number of years, right?
Well, for 14. We've had the newspaper for 13 years. Okay. We were here a year ahead of that. I actually left Detroit when I was 17. I graduated from high school. I was 16 my senior year and turned 17 in April. And then in July, I was gone to band camp. I went to Central State University, historically black college,
okay,
in Ohio. And I have not lived full-time back in the city since I was 17. So mm-hmm. it's my 30th year class reunion. Who could believe that coming up? So, yes, but I'm back and forth from Detroit. My family is still in Detroit. I've never lived longer than 6 hours drive away from Detroit, so I'm mm-hmm. very much involved in what happens in the city. My friends who are artists there, friends who are in politics in Michigan. My friend was just elected Benton Harbor's mayor. So, you know, I'm very proud of Michigan and the black community that it has produced.
When did you... I hope this doesn't... Let's see. I'm curious about how activism has played a part in your life and how long that's been the case.
You know, I actually did not term myself an activist writer until 2004 when I was here in Kentucky.
Okay.
That I was at the Kentucky Women Writers Conference, and it was Rebecca Walker, Alice Walker's daughter, and Sonia Sanchez on a panel about activist writing and
okay.
activist journalism. And I was like, wow, that's what I am. You know, so I didn't realize that's what I was and what I was doing, but it's kind of, you know, it's just kind of a part of what we do as a community. You can't just be, you know, you really have to reach back and help people. So that's always been a part of my life. And we didn't come here to open up a newspaper or a media outlet. We had plans for other businesses, but this is what the community asked for. So anybody who's an entrepreneur, you look to see what the community wants and needs, and you try to fulfill that.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, it worked well for us from the activism point of view and from the entrepreneurial standpoint.
And I take it, I mean, it's sort of a statement of the obvious, but you saw a need for this voice. And there was you saw a lack of this voice here in Kentucky.
We actually tried to revive the community voice with Don Cordray. We sat him down at our dining room table and said, can we be advertisers in your paper for the business we really wanted to start? And he was like, no, I don't plan on coming back. I don't want to come back. And if you got any sense, you wouldn't do it. You know, people are ungrateful. I got death threats. I got this, that, and the other. And we were like, oh, it can't be that bad. Yeah, it was that bad.
And so the Community Voice, just for those who may not know, was
a black newspaper here immediately before the Key News Journal. He published for 13 years. He was widely circulated, had a great editorial page, one-man band, Mr. Don Cordray, still in town doing good work. However, he just was not able to sustain. Advertising wasn't able to sustain mm-hmm. his operation.
So enter the Key News Journal, which comes out
monthly now. We started uh-huh. out bi-monthly mm-hmm. and now we're out just once a month now that we have weekly radio.
Now how first of all, where can people find the Key News Journal?
We have two boxes around town. If you catch public transportation, we have a blue box on Vine Street in the bus station, but we also have a red box in front of the Lyric Theater okay. on the community art side. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, we're in most of your black barbershops, beauty shops, small businesses, churches. Very organic distribution method.
Right. Absolutely. Let's see. Patrice Muhammad is here, along with Delano Massey of Key Conversations. The radio show, how did it become an outgrowth of the at what point did you think, well, okay,
well,
we're doing a newspaper, that's enough work, so let's do a radio show too?
Yeah, it was really again business. You know, I have to say we're entrepreneurs first. So my husband and I, Lamont Muhammad, I had a meeting with one of our print newspaper advertisers, and I felt like they weren't spending enough money, and I'm like, how else can we get some of your money? And so I pitched it to the local Pepsi bottlers. I was like, what about a radio show? And they were like, well, you know, we sponsor the NAACP president in Columbus on the TV. Why not? So give us a price. You know, what do you think it's worth? And so we talked about it, and they've been our sponsor for, they've been our, one of our primary sponsors for the past 12, 13 years that we've been on the radio. And it was really just that we needed the community to be able to have a conversation, because nobody else is hiring people to do what we do. That with the advent of public radio, I mean, not public radio, but this new low power FM, you're giving a lot of people who are hobbyists an opportunity. But for real journalists like Delano and I, there's really a desert out there, that there's not a lot of opportunity for black voices and black faces to present the news.
We're talking about Key Conversations Radio with two of the hosts, Patrice Muhammad and Delano Massey. And I'll tell you what, why don't we take like a short musical break and come back and talk about maybe some of the issues that you all have most passionately kind of addressed, or some, I don't know, some, you know, let's come back and talk about some sticky topics. What do you say? This is Trivial Thursdays, and here's some music from The D, as my guest Patrice Muhammad would say. It's Aretha Franklin right here on WRFL. We're back. This is Trivial Thursdays on WRFL, and
you ain't ready for that, is you?
I'm here with Patrice Muhammad and Delano Massey.
And Delano's trying to hold me back again. Don't do it.
Those of Key Conversations Radio, which airs on WKY on Sundays, right?
Sundays at 7 p.m. Yeah. On WKY and 7 a.m. on 107.9.
I put a big speaker out in my I wind up in my backyard about that time, and if I catch the beginning of your all show, I'm like dragging a speaker out into the backyard so I can be out there and not miss. Like, I can't tear myself away from the speaker if your all show is on. Maybe because it's just an unfolding conversation, and I feel like that's part of what you do.
It is. I mean, it's not scripted, so the conversation that we have, we do have our talking points, but where it goes, like, even when we do discuss it beforehand, we'll stop and say, hold on, just wait until we go on air.
Right, which is what I should have done just a minute ago, but
because now I won't say it. Now I might filter myself.
Now, you guys, how do you, Delano? So, how do you all? How do you come up with? I don't know your, the outline of a given week. Like, how do you choose? How do you choose stories? Your all stories tend to be kind of incisive, sometimes often kind of the word hot button seems silly to me, but issues that involve minorities, that involve
not minorities, okay, that involve Black people. That's our lane. Our lane is the Black community, so we're not qualified to discuss Latino issues, okay, Asian issues, LGBTQ issues. That's not what we do. We're not minorities. We're a Black focused show, Black hosted show.
Okay, and so you pick news stories that have to do with the Black community, that have to do with what kind of aspects of the Black community.
So we actually try to do hot topics, and it really just, we pay attention to what's going on in the news, especially locally, but sometimes nationally, and we'll just have conversations, whether it's through text messaging or through email. It's like, hey, what have you seen this week? Is there something that we should be discussing? Is there something that the community would actually have an interest in? And that's just kind of how it evolves. And we might have a list of six different topics that we want to discuss, and we might not make it through all of them. Mm-hmm. Or there have been cases where we start talking about one thing, and then the dialogue is so strong that we just cut everything else out. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of depends. It's not scripted. It's very free.
So then does that... Do you have kind of a, since the show is pre-recorded, do you have like kind of a free-ranging discussion and then go back later and snip it down to where it's the right length, basically, or?
I try not to do much editing of the show.
It doesn't sound like it. Yeah,
we try.
That's a compliment, by the way.
So, yeah, we try to let it be. Sometimes we you know how it is. You get a little bit into the minutia of a thing, and I'm like, nobody cares that much, so we may cut.
So you cut out Delano's part at that point.
So usually that is Lizelle's part. But we try not to do a lot of editing. What people say is what you hear on the show.
Yeah. Let's see. So we were kind of speaking of going back and forth with, text messages. Yes. We were doing a little bit of that, and whenever you guys are talking about issues on the show, like I said, I am, like a lot of people, I think, kind of...
fly on the wall feeling.
Yeah, but really, I don't know, feeling kind of plugged in, feeling like I'm hearing like some real perspectives on something, I'm hearing something that's not... A snippet version of a story. And a lot of times I'm hearing about stories that I, quite honestly, I haven't really thought about that much.
Earlier in the year, we talked a lot about an episode of Black-ish, and they were dealing with a number of issues related to race. And I think all of us had watched it, and Patrice said, let's do a segment on that, because it was dealing with... police violence and riots, and or I shouldn't say riots, I should say protest. And we actually had some good dialogue about that. But I think part of that, because we actually did get a lot of feedback about that particular segment, but it was because it was very transparent and it was real. But that show that we saw hit home, and it was something that resonated with everyone. So I think that helped. And I think that was what we got from other people who had listened to that show.
Was that the show, if I can ask, was that the show where you talked about how you teach your kids to talk to...
Correct.
To address the police?
Yes.
Yeah, that was compelling to me. Something I had never really thought about very much. But I remember you talking about mm-hmm. something that a lot of black people talk about, I guess, which is teaching your kids how to talk to the police in a way that, why don't you describe it? I mean,
well, the fact that you had never thought about that
right.
is actually a privilege that is afforded to you that
exactly.
I just don't have, that my father didn't have. And so the conversations that he had to have with me are very similar to the conversation that I will one day have to have with my son. And I hope I don't. I think my father had hoped the same thing. But there is a reality that's there. And that's not to say that all police officers are bad or all people are bad. It's just that there are some people who are bad. And at least more than anything, you should be educated and you should know how to navigate through some of those situations. It's just a matter of being a little bit smarter in how you approach things.
Mm-hmm. And that was a gender conversation as well, because what I found them as black men, the conversations that their parents had with them, my parents didn't have this big come to Jesus moment conversation with me about this is how you deal with the police, because I believe as a female child, I had a little more leeway in the way that I was perceived. And then also growing up in an all black city, you know, we had some issues with the police, but they weren't race-based issues that we were dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Was it seven words? Is that what have you said seven words before, something like, was it yes or no sir? And
yeah, I hear people say that they kind of simplify it into the no sir, yes sir, thank you sir kind of thing.
I actually try to abide by that myself.
Yeah. Or if you get pulled over, just to keep your hands at
10 and 2.
Yeah, 10 and 2.
Right.
And not to make any sudden actions. You know, I keep, even for myself, I keep my registration and my all that information readily available. I know some people who tape it on their dashboard so they don't have to go too far for it.
Uh-huh. Well, that was I think, a that show was a classic example of, I don't know, the kind of thing that I hear on, and that your listeners here, and I think it's compelling radio, but you know, it's real too. I mean, maybe that's why it's so compelling, you know.
And that, you know, and that's what one of my favorite sayings is, white people have enough white friends, right? So you need me to be who I am, and I am black, and so I don't need to try to be appealing to the broader community or to the white community. They are interested in me being myself. They're interested in us having conversations that we would normally have. And I think that very often shows and people go really wrong when they try to step out of their lane, or they try to appeal to a group that they're not even a part of, because you don't know what that group needs because you're not part of that group. So why not seek to serve the community that you're a part of? And other people will be interested in that, because, like we say, I know a lot of people who listen to our show because these are conversations that they don't have privy to, they don't have access to, or these are situations that they may not have thought about when it's time to vote and go to an election. That some of the questions we ask the candidates are very targeted, pointed, because they will directly affect our community. And that's why we participate in Operation Turnout with the black churches when they bring the candidates in to speak to the black church community, that we have been the exclusive hosts of that since its inception. And it's very important that black journalists ask the questions of the candidates, because these are the questions that the people want answered.
Mm-hmm. So you, like these kinds of forums are things that are regular features of your show, like having people come into your show and talk about things that specifically affect the black community.
Yeah, and what Patrice was referring to, the gubernatorial debate
okay.
that was hosted at Kentucky State University in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one event that we did. And a lot of the questions that we asked were questions that probably are not going to get asked in some of the other debates. And
right.
At KYT, we had debates too, but the questions that we asked for WKYT, whether it was the League of Women's Voters or the Herald Leader, those questions were not the same as the questions that we asked. In terms of the people who come on the show, we had Manny Calk, the superintendent of Fayette County Schools. He was on the show recently, and he was able to discuss a number of things. So a lot of the questions that we did ask had to do with redistricting and also the achievement gap, which continues to be an issue for not just Fayette County Schools, but for the state of Kentucky.
Yeah. Why don't you mention, well, we've just got a few minutes left, but you were talking about Lexington Catholic and your all's role in that. So I'd like to give you all credit for that.
Yeah, we were able to break the story about the lynching threat text messages that were sent to a black student by his football teammate. And we actually were tipped on that story by Delano, that Delano got it. But he passed it off to the black press, and he can tell you why.
Dang.
How's that for a setup?
You know, I guess I knew about it, and it kind of comes from barbershop conversation sometimes. You always hear about everything in the black barbershops. But I wrestled with the idea of doing the story and was concerned about doing the story myself, being a black male, and what's the impact that would have. How would that be received? So there were a lot of questions that I guess I had wrestled with, and I meet with Patrice once a week anyways, and we have regular conversation throughout the week. So I actually had told her about the situation, and then just seemed like it was a better fit for the black press to tackle that story, at least in the initial phase, mm-hmm. and then everyone else picked the story up as it went viral, which is kind of a trend. I mean, we see that happen quite a bit these days.
So let's talk about social media a little bit. How does social media play into affairs of the black community? I won't say the minority community. with their own.
Well, you know, as a racial population, the black community uses Twitter more than any other ethnic group. So
I've heard the term black Twitter.
Black Twitter is a real thing. It is a real place. And so there are definitely things that trend on black Twitter that don't trend anywhere else. And we have a term called dragging, right? That sometimes
what's that?
People get dragged on black Twitter that, okay. You know, when people do something really dumb that people, you know, are quick to call them out, say something about it, and it turns into a trending topic in our community that it may not be trending everywhere else. So, you know, we were looking at something online today. There was a meme going around called Uncle Denzel. And this has been a long time ago, but it was really funny that, you know, you know, black person has this one uncle, the way that they show up and the way that they talk, or who may wear, you know, a sweatsuit with dress socks and dress pants or something like that. And Denzel Washington, just a bad picture was taken of him, and somebody started calling him Uncle Denzel. Then everybody started making up this imaginary conversation that he would have. And so it was funny that you realized Denzel was actually looking the way he was, with this extra shaggy mustache and extra shaggy sideburns, because he was preparing for a movie role. And so now the movie is finally coming out. So as soon as you see it, you remember this Uncle Denzel trend that we had, you know, several months ago. And so it's really hilarious. But a lot of times it's serious, because what happened in Ferguson, were it not for black Twitter, you wouldn't have known about the real details of everything that was happening in Ferguson. And then for the black newspaper, if it wasn't for the St. Louis American, that's mm-hmm. an award-winning black newspaper in St. Louis, you would not have had the same coverage. CNN was getting coverage from, you know, the St. Louis American, just like when the Lexington Catholic story broke, everyone was getting their news from the Key News Journal. There are stories that the black community trusts the black press to tell, and that's why we're important, because we can bring it to the rest of the community.
Well, I'm glad that people have the chance to tune into that, to tune into Key Conversations, and to pick up the Key News Journal. I'm really happy for you guys both to come visit. I wish we had more time, but we've got Democracy Now coming down the pike here. I've got this buzzing in my ear. So on behalf of Trivial Thursdays, Delano Massey and Patrice Muhammad, thanks so much for coming.